This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear about the Black family reunion that gets underway this week. Also, bringing the natural world back to the waterways and the automobile capital of America. But first, it's that time of year again when students are making their way to college campuses locally and across the country to start the next big phase of their lives. While it's an exciting time, it can be stressful for many incoming students trying to figure out the ins and outs of college. In his new book, So You Think You're Ready for College? Critical College Skills That Don't Show Up on a College Application, Dr. Kent Cubbage provides tips and suggestions to students for making the transition to college life. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kent, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Mark, how are you?
Doing great, thank you. Kent, I started college in the 1970s, and you were in college in the 1990s. In the past couple of decades, what's changed? What's different for students going back to college these days? What are they facing that we didn't face, perhaps?
Well, so many things have changed in those in the last few decades, as you mentioned, Mark. And if you look at the data, you'll hear professors maybe lament that, you know, students are coming to college, they can't write as well as they used to, and they're not as good in math, let alone science and that type of thing. It's kind of hard to really make a dent in that once they get to us. Now, places like community colleges have what's called transitional or developmental education. We used to call that remedial. But the results are kind of mixed. So there's not a whole lot we can do by the time they get to us to really turn that around, just the average college student. But if anyone has been in the classroom at the college level for, say, the last 15, 20 years or longer, what we've also seen is kind of a decline in student behavior and student communication, appropriate communication, things like that. The good news, and that's why I wrote the book, Mark, is that I think those things are very fixable.
Well, why do you think we've had this decline in communications and behavior?
I really think it's kind of a function of social media, Mark. And I'll get email from students from time to time, and they say things to me I know they probably wouldn't say to my face. It's kind of easy to hide behind the computer screen, and I understand that. But social media has changed so much. Students can communicate with the entire world, you know, with a few clicks. So in the book, I talk so much about proper communication with a professor. You need to treat that as professional. Treat that as if you were, you know, when you're in college, that's your preparation for the professional world. So you need to start being professional at the college level. So in the book, I talk at length, I dedicate an entire chapter on proper and professional communication with professors. And that includes what to approach them with and when during their office hours. When the most appropriate time is to approach them, Mark, I'll get students who come up to me right as I'm starting class with some personal drama. And it's not that I don't care. It's just not the appropriate time, because then I have to slow the class down and we have to wait to start because someone has a personal issue. So I'm always willing to hear from students if they're having issues and they want to talk to me as professor. But right when class is starting is not the time to do it.
Kent, how much do you think students need to be careful on social media, especially since your professors can see this, potential employers in the future can see these things?
Oh, absolutely, and I have an entire chapter to taking the survey of the instructor in the course. And going back decades, we might remember when we, at the end of the semester, the professor would pass out the survey, and you have questions about him or her and the course and so forth, and you'd fill in the bubbles and turn it in. Most of that's done online now. But in addition to that, students have these websites, Mark, where they can go and post things about professors specifically. And there's really no structured environment. Oftentimes you'll see it's the disaffected students, the students who loved you and thought you were God's gift to the professoriate. They don't go do things like that, but sometimes students get upset. They're upset about a grade and they'll go and they'll put something really inappropriate, sometimes vicious on the internet, and that can come back to haunt them.
Kent, one thing technology has done is it's made it possible to take your courses in so many different ways nowadays. You can take them online. You can be part of what is a massive online class. There are all kinds of options. As far as the way technology has changed the formats for a lot of college classes, what's your advice for figuring out that aspect of college? Because that's something that, you know, compared to what you and I went through, we didn't have to figure that kind of thing out.
Oh, Mark, I can't imagine having sat in my bathing suit at the beach taking a class back in the 1990s.
It has made it a little more convenient, yeah.
Just a little bit. There are all sorts of new course formats which really weren't around just 10 years ago. There are courses that are just fully online. Sometimes the students will actually have to come in person and show an ID to take a final exam. But other than that, they're out there in the ether. There are classes called hybrid classes where students will do online work, but they'll come to campus maybe for the lab. There's even a new format called the flipped class. And this is fairly new, and this is where basically the students do all of the course content online, all of it. There'll be video lectures and simulations and problems to work out on the internet, and classes for nothing but asking questions. And sometimes students will come to register, and they don't realize that professor is using that flipped method. They end up in that class, they're ready for a lecture, they got there with their laptop or their notebook on the first day. And the professor says, well, I hope you all finished your assignment. And what assignment was that? So students have to be really, I think they need to be familiar with these new delivery methods. Otherwise, it can cause big problems. All it takes is a student, you know, signing up for a format that they were unfamiliar with and then not being comfortable with it, not being familiar with it. They end up dropping the class, and it costs them hundreds of dollars.
You know, and that's something that, again, I didn't have to deal with that kind of thing back when I was in college. Everything was pretty much, you got a piece of paper that told you the instructions for things. You got a syllabus, but now you have to really be on your toes, don't you?
Yes, and syllabi have stayed more or less the same. They don't look a whole lot, you know, different than when you and I were in school. But, you know, we put them online now, but now we have all sorts of information online about online cheating. That's a brand new thing. You know, I have to tell my students, hey, look, online cheating is still cheating. And some of the classes that I teach, the students ask, what they do is they log in and they start their video camera on their computer, and that actually records them taking the exam at home. And if they get out of the picture so that we can't see them when we go back and review, that's considered cheating.
So there's a lot of new things, not just for the students to think about. The professors have to keep all this stuff in mind as well, it sounds like.
Right, and it's probably more so than at any time in history now. I mean, maybe a professor could go through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s and pretty much have the same yellowed notes that they did from their first year. But as professors, you know, we have to be on top of these technologies. And it's absolutely critical that the student understand what those technologies are. It's much more than just buying a laptop and heading off to campus now, Mark. Students really need to know about those particular formats, and their professors are there to help them if they need it with that.
Do you think most students know how to schedule their classes and structure their time to be the most efficient and allow the most study time?
That's probably one thing where the average student could use a little bit of work. And I'll tell you this, I'm also an academic advisor. So students come to me if they're majoring in certain subjects. They come to me, and we sit down and we talk about what courses they need, when, you know, what semester they should take them, and that type of thing. And, Mark, I would bet about 50% of all my advisees are either late or no-shows for their advisement appointments. I didn't see that 15 years ago, but I see it now, And that's more than just building basic professionalism and showing respect for the professor. Because I tell you what often happens is students get careless. They miss an advisement appointment. They end up taking a class or two that they don't need that doesn't count towards graduation. Now, when we were in school, if we messed up that way, if we got sloppy and took a course we didn't need, we'd be out some study time, some class time, but at the most a couple hundred bucks. But now, if a student ends up taking a class or two or even more that they don't need because they were careless, we're talking, especially at a lot of private schools, we are talking extra thousands of dollars that weren't budgeted for. Mom and dad didn't budget for those things. The student loans may not cover those things. Financial aid may not cover those things. And I see that happen to students all the time.
So you're telling students to embrace those advisors.
Oh, absolutely. Your advisor, what I always tell students, your advisor is there for you. You will get an assigned advisor, but the students really have to take ownership of over their program. What I say is the advisor is there to help, but the advisor is the guardrails. The students should have that course catalog. It's available online now. They should always have printed out exactly what courses they need to take. I can remember when I was in school, it was 2 pages on green paper, and they kind of looked like guacamole by the time I was finished with my undergrad, because I would mark the classes off as I took them, and I would put down grades and notes and so forth.
Mine looked like pizza sauce.
Really, coffee, all sorts of things. But it was a little bit different. Really have to stay up on that. And sometimes, like I said, there'll be late or no-shows for their advising appointments. But also, I don't think they realize that, and I tell this in the book, that your advisor's there to help, but not to hold their hand.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation with Dr. Kent Cubbage. Kent, part of the problem, do you think there's more pressure these days? You get one shot at college. The tuition costs are so much higher than they've been. And there's a lot more competition when you go out into the workforce trying to get that first job. Do you think that adds to the whole pressure of getting this thing right?
Absolutely. I was just reading an article about how many students are taking a fifth year now. And just think of the thousands of dollars that's taking them. There's really so little room for error. In the 60s and 70s, a student could maybe just float in and float out, incur any debt, and be able to cash flow things as they went through college. That's just not the case anymore. College tuition has skyrocketed. Everybody knows that. Also, fees. Fees have sort of gone through the roof. Student fees, activity fees, lab fees, things like that. There's just very, very little room for error. And I come back to some things that I've mentioned, taking courses you don't need or really not buckling down and needing a fifth year and so forth. And we're talking about if a student's really borrowed a lot of money, those mistakes may be lasting in another 2 years of paying back student loans.
We will continue our conversation with Dr. Kent Cubbage, advice for making that transition to college life. And you can join us with your questions and comments at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and my guest this afternoon, Dr. Kent Cubbage. His new book is So You Think You're Ready for College, Critical College Skills That Don't Show Up on a College Application. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Kent, what do you think is the most important thing that new college students should focus on as they're heading off to school?
Well, I think first and foremost that they need to remember that they're there to get an education, and college was always a place where you could go and you can kind of explore yourself, and it would be enlightening and all these new things. And I always encourage students to join clubs to make the most of the experience. But the bottom line is that their parents have saved for their college for them to go to class. And I think sometimes students will lose sight of that because there's so many other things going on. Another thing that's really mushroom, Mark, in the last few years, I always challenge people. I say, go back to your alma mater if you haven't been back to campus in 20, 30 years. You probably won't recognize it because colleges and universities have been on huge building booms, and they've been putting up building after building after building, and a lot of these buildings really have nothing to do directly with the classroom. There's all sorts of new services available that we didn't have really just 15, 20 years ago. All these nice new gleaming buildings, and I always tell students and parents, you need to be familiar with what those services are, how they're performed, when you can go, when you shouldn't go, because ultimately you are paying for those services whether you use them or not. So you really need to utilize them as best you can.
So what kind of services are you talking about, Ken, and what are ways that students can find out about those particular services?
Sure. Students, I can remember when I went to school, and college can be rough. It can be stressful. There's homesickness. There's the relationship issues. Maybe you're getting some bad grades, things like that. It can be emotionally rough. And when I was in school, there may have been someone part-time who was loosely a counselor you could go and talk to. But now, just as an example, college colleges and universities have entire counseling buildings. And students can go there if they're having problems. But not only that, they have life coaches. Maybe a student's actually doing very well and wants to know, you know, where can I go in the future? Where are the jobs? Things like that. Maybe they just need a pep talk. And they have life coaches, things like that. I can't imagine, you know, just 20 years ago having had that service available. Mm-hmm. But all sorts of other things, even, say, free tutoring. Students sometimes won't even, they'll be struggling a little bit in a class, and there's free tutoring on campus, and they're not taking advantage of it. So if you walk a campus now and you go on a campus tour with your kid, and I had a friend do this just a few months ago, he said, we visited 7 buildings on my campus tour with my kid. One of them was an academic building.
And all the rest were services of some type.
That's right.
Is that the best way to find out? Take that tour, look around, and see what's available?
Well, here's what I tell students in the book. I say, you might have taken that tour. You probably did. But there's so much more to see on campus. I tell students the week before classes start, as soon as you get there, and it really doesn't matter if you're a freshman or a senior, walk the entire campus, even on a big campus. Find out where everything is located. Find out what their hours are. Take your device with you and just jot down some notes. Don't rely on that campus tour. Walk the halls. Know exactly where the building is, what who the contact is, what the room number is. I'll dedicate almost a half a chapter to getting familiar with campus, not taking things for granted. Students oftentimes, and I see this, Mark, all the time, they try to conduct their campus business a few days before the semester begins, and then they're surprised when there's 1,000 people in line and they can't get in to see who they need to see. Same thing with textbooks. I mean, there's so many new things now with e-textbooks and free online textbooks, but a lot of students still buy the paper copy. And what they'll do is they'll show up. They won't even have the book for the first day of class. They end up going to the bookstore. All the used books are sold. They have to buy new books, and they've spent an extra $500.
Well, that was always my dilemma, Kent. I'd wait till the day the class started and then go out and get the book when I could have gotten it ahead of time.
Oh, Mark, I'll send you my book in a time machine, Mark.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Tracy in Oakley. Hi, Tracy.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Hey, Tracy.
Sure can. Go right ahead.
So I am wondering how colleges, admissions folks view diplomas from online high schools, and I know they're very new. Are there any data regarding, you know, their quality, graduation rates, acceptance rates into college?
Tracy, by any chance, have you homeschooled students through an online curriculum?
Well, I've just started Googling about it, and I didn't know there was a distinction between homeschooling and online, per se. I'm very naive about the whole topic, but it's come up recently in my family. I have a senior who is, like a lot of seniors, pretty tired of his brick-and-mortar school, and
right.
He's asking about it, but, you know, it put up a red flag to me because, you know, I'm, no pun intended, pretty old school. So,
right.
I feel like I'm leery about college courses that are online. I really value the education I got in school at the University of Cincinnati. And
right.
So any comments, are you aware of any biases against these online diplomas and
right.
any kind of information you might have or point me in the right direction, I would appreciate it.
Sure, Tracy. I think what's really critical to do is to research the individual institution. If you read some of the articles over the last few years, that there's been some of the some of the online colleges, they've gotten into some trouble for this or that. Their students have accrued debt, and then they're having trouble finding jobs. It's really kind of a mixed bag. I even teach. I've done some adjunct work, purely distance, at some other colleges and universities. So what I would caution everyone to do don't necessarily discount, an online, we call that a distance education. Don't necessarily discount that because you may have heard that there may be biases, but it's very, very important to research the individual college or university, make sure they're accredited. A lot of them are not accredited with their regional accreditation board, and students end up taking courses and they want to go transfer them, or they get this diploma or degree, and maybe they want to transfer to a four-year school, or they want to get a job here or there, and all of a sudden it comes back to haunt them that either the entire institution or a program they offered wasn't accredited. So what I would tell you to do is just make sure you investigate the individual institution, their programs, and you can go online now and get all sorts of great information about reputation and rankings and so forth. So I wouldn't necessarily shy away from distance ed, but I'd be very careful before you jump into it without doing some research.
Let's talk with Sarah in North Avondale. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. So my question is, I went to college in 2002, and I don't know if it's a product of being the daughter of two teachers, but I found the academics totally fine. But I literally could not boil a pot of water on my own. So I'm wondering, I didn't know how to pay a bill. I didn't know how to do a lot of the just basic, like, homekeeping things. And as a 17-year-old kid, it's often hard to find somebody on college campus who has any clue in the first couple of weeks when you're trying to settle into housing.
Right, with those housekeeping skills. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm wondering whether the book addresses that, because if so, I'm going to buy it for all of my cousins, because I think that those kind of skills are so underrated when you go to college, because everyone's looking at your resume and everyone's looking at your academics instead.
Absolutely. And just real quick, I do hope you buy it. Just put in a quick plug. It's available in booksellers, but also mainly on Amazon. And you can also download the book. You can get a paper copy on Amazon or the Amazon Kindle version. It's very inexpensive. But I think you bring up a really good point. I tell students it is so critical that first week. And I'll give you another example. I have probably taught, I'm going to guess over the years, maybe 200 different sections. You might teach 4, 5, 6, what we call sections a semester, and you just multiply that by spring, summer, fall, and 15 years and so forth. I have never, not once, not one single time, had everyone in class and on time on the first day. And that's such a critical day. That sets the tone for the whole semester. The professor goes over the syllabus. There might be, assignments that are given out. And students will be late, and I'll talk to them after class, and everything was avoidable. They said, well, I couldn't find a parking space. And I said, well, there was 1,000 people on the first day trying to get into 10 parking spots, and that's something that, you could have anticipated. Or they're not familiar with the building. I tell students, get your schedule out a week as soon as you get settled on campus. Get your schedule out, and you walk to every single classroom. Don't just go to the building. Go up the steps. Walk to the classroom, and then anticipate the zoo that it's going to be on the first day. Give yourself an extra 30 minutes. One of the worst things you can do, and students do this all the time, they get careless during that first week. They say, I know where the building is. Sometimes the student's a senior, and they say, I know this campus like the back of my hand.
They get complacent.
Yeah, exactly. They go to a new building, and you need a degree in cryptology to decipher the room numbers, and they end up late. So I tell students also, Sarah, get any business done that you can get done, the summer before you start. Don't even wait till you're settled in the dorm or an apartment or whatnot. Any business that you need to, financial aid, that's another big one. Students will wait till the last minute to make sure that their financial aid's gone through. They don't ask questions. And I have seen that incredibly stressed green look from students on campus walking around the halls on that first week. They're lost. Yeah, I always help them. I always joke and say, if you were any more lost, I'd send out an Amber Alert. But so I try to help them. But it occurs to me, semester in and semester out, students have just waited to the last minute to do anything, and then they're shocked when there's lines out the door and they can't conduct their business. So it really starts with getting settled on campus and finding all of your classrooms.
Be punctual and be on time. Kent, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, and to all those parents who are sending students off to college this fall, you've done a great job. Congratulations. The book's available on Amazon, and if I can if I can save you $1,000 by spending $15, well, then it's a good deal.
Dr. Kent Cubbage. His new book is So You Think You're Ready for College? Critical College Skills That Don't Show Up on a College Application. Coming up, we'll hear about the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge, and later in the show, we'll hear about the Black Family Reunion that's being held in Cincinnati this week. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.